Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, November 19th, 2015. I'm not sure where you are, but the sun is just coming up where I am. So, anyway, very interesting. But tonight's main science topic, I will be talking about the similarities between comets, planets, asteroids, and actually all other objects in outer space. The similarities. How are the, you know, the, well, anyway, I'll get into that in a minute. I want to talk a little bit about the future. Oh my goodness, since last week, has the world become a different place? The false flag terrorist attack in Paris, and that's, you know, you have to, you can smell this a mile away. There's no, I mean, anyway, but the change now, Europe has become a police state overnight. The news media is pounding this, and of course, in those countries, there's severe censorship. A little story that came through the international news right as this event was happening. First of all, it was posted on Wikipedia 2 hours before it happened. Wikipedia has a history button where you can go in and click on the history and see what happened, you know, what was posted on Wikipedia prior. They took down the history, so you could no longer see, but some people have captured this. There's another story that came out very early and then was also erased from the international scene. And this is what happened in one of the restaurants. And now, at first, by the way, there was one restaurant shooting. Now they're claiming there were three. So, and the other odd thing is you don't ever hear about what happened to the so-called terrorists. They just appear to have vanished into thin air. So at any rate, but here's the one story I guarantee you, you didn't hear in the good old U.S. of A. or any place else in the mainstream media. One of the restaurant shootings, mind you, there was a stadium issue, there was one at a concert, and then there was a restaurant. Allegedly, there were three at first. Now they're saying there were two more restaurant incidents. But the this came through live feed. At the restaurant shooting, four guys walk in, start shooting. The dressed in terrorist outfit with the strap belt around the middle, you know, hooded, you know, however they came in. And in the restaurant eating supper were three members of one of the drug cartels. And they know who the people were. They've identified them. And they were having supper in this restaurant in Paris. They threw over a table. Once the shooting started, they were all armed. They all had handguns, of course, probably illegal. And they shot and killed the four assailants, the four terrorists. Now, apparently, that was not in the script. The last thing you saw on the feed that came through was these guys in handcuffs. So, actually, they're heroes. They saved countless lives. They arrested them and hauled them away, and that's the last you heard about that. Now, I guarantee you, you're not going to hear that anywhere on the mainstream news. Why? Because, number one, it wasn't in the script, and second of all, they sure don't want to pass along the idea that if the common person were armed and trained and had guns, then none of this would happen. The people, innocent people, being just slaughtered without any protection, and of course the police don't come until after it's all over. Anyway, just insane. But as I said, the world a very different place, and now the United States is reacting. New York City, I understand, is just a police state. This reaction to this false flag event is very much predictable. But the other thing is, I'm fully expecting this to come to the United States. So put your seatbelt on. I don't know if I'd be going to any sports games or concerts or even restaurants, because you don't know where they're going to pull this off. And it's the same thing. ISIS, the common term now is ISIS is not Islamic State. It's Israel Mossad terrorist organization. And that's what it is. It's CIA Mossad all the way. And the Russians have pointed this out to a bunch of dumbed down, stupid American reporters. I don't know if you saw Putin giving the news report on this, but the stupid American reporter sitting there looking with this stupid look at on their face, which is what they should have because they are stupid. But at any rate, talk about the future. What is the future? The states have to begin preparing to, basically, they have to divorce themselves from the federal government, which is run up the credit cards. I mean, it's characteristic, classic bad spouse. They've run up the credit card. They have a seriously bad drug problem. They've been taken to counseling. They don't know how to. They're abusive. They're spouse beaters. They're psychologically disruptive or abusive. Yeah, there's no way they're going to be cured. The only thing you can do is simply leave. The only problem is the states have paid for this tremendous military machine, and somehow if they leave, they can't demand their share of this military machine, including airplanes and who knows, satellites, spacecraft, tanks, heavy equipment, armament, etc. So it's a huge problem. When I was on John Moore's show yesterday, he said that many states, the governors have taken back and formed militias because the National Guard has been even taken over by the federal government. But where's the future? Be prepared in all ways to break ties with the federal government. I mean, it's going to happen. And then they're bringing in hundreds of thousands of Arab refugees into the United States. And I mentioned this on Bill Deagle's show. If you do the calculations and you take, you just do the simple math, and this is trillions of dollars, and the federal government is not doing anything towards supporting them. They just want to dump these into the states, and there's about half the states right now, the governors have said, no, we are not taking these people into our states, because along with them come terrorists, all kinds of other problems, all the medical problems, everything else. So they're trying to play on the humanity side of people saying, oh, you have to take these refugees. Well, the refugees are coming from a place that was forced into war by basically the bankers. This is a banker insane world. And so the only thing the states can do for self-protection is to just dump the federal government. That's the only solution. So be prepared. And that means the states are going to have to take over a monetary system. That's the very first thing. Have to take over defense. These are the big ticket items today. They're going to have to limit who comes into their states. These states are going to have to literally become very protective to survive. This is the future. And also expect very much that these states that break away, in fact, Texas was one of the first ones, they have been severely weather bombed. Yes, weather bombed. Texas for the past year has just been just weather bombed almost out of existence. And so they were one of the first ones that probably would be leaving the union. But once one does, the domino effect where the other ones leave, I mean, it's just for self-survival. You cannot stay with this federal government anymore. It's insane. It's out of control. There is no vote. I mean, the upcoming election is a joke. You don't vote for a president. You haven't voted for a president in decades, if not for 100 years. even back in the early 1900s, the presidents were openly saying presidents are not elected, they're appointed, and then that's very much the case. But anyway, the future, the U.S. economy is literally shut down as we go into winter. What little construction there was, of course, ends in the wintertime typically. So it's really the future, where is it? Just hunker down. My advice also is to start owning carrot bars. That's the only legitimate alternative currency in existence today. The Bitcoin, it's a very strange system, but it's been allowed because that's the type of currency they're going to come in with very shortly. Okay, I don't want to dwell on this too long, but I'm just trying to instill in my audience the future is now. The future, the time to hunker down, to make sure you have food, water, and supplies, etc., is now. So get your act together. If you haven't done it already, make sure you have a water filter, you have nutritious food, you have stored up grains, etc. Keep them in airtight containers so insects don't get into them. And then also start using. You should be using your preparedness equipment every day. Don't wait until something happens. Well, something has already happened, but I'm fully expecting them to start false flag events in the United States, and I'm fully expecting also to NASA to come out and say, oh, there's this big solar flare and it's taking down the grid. They've been pumping this up, and there's no reason to say that. The sun has never been at a lower ebb in history in hundreds of years. And since I was mentioning carrot bars, and I also sell Via Viente on my page, but people look at this, and I think a lot of people have the wrong idea. Now, people may say, well, I'm not a salesman. Nobody in carrot bars sells gold or is a salesman. Here's how it works. Let me explain this, and it's a statistical issue. Some people think they need a really spiffy web page, and that's great because you can bring traffic in, etc. But here's the reality. If people are not already of the mindset that they need to do something with their worthless U.S. dollars or euros or whatever, Canadian dollars, whatever they are, if they don't already know that they should be putting it into something that's going to be sustainable, then all the teaching in the world and all your jumping up and down and talking to them isn't going to do a thing. So here's how it actually works. If you went out and talked to 100 people that you know, even if you don't know, whatever, just 100 people, and you say, give me 5 minutes of your time. I just want to tell you about something. But the way you typically start is you just start talking about the economy, whatever. And of 100 people, 80 people would give you 5 minutes of their time. 5 minutes. And you'd say, would you give me your undivided attention for 5 minutes? 80 of those 100 people would say yes. But only 40 of them would actually give you undivided attention. The other 40 would be flipping with their phone or be distracted in the first minute. Okay. So now you're down to 40 people out of the original 100. Of those 40 people who actually paid attention to you, that means they have an interest in understanding what they could do to invest some of their money that they're already trying to save into something that's sustainable. 20 of those people would actually sign up and buy a package. Buying a package means that you pay an initial one-time fee, and then you never have to pay a fee again. You don't have to buy anything monthly or whatever. And then, but of those 20 people, only 6 would realize that this is a money-making venture and run with it to the point where you wouldn't be able to stop them. So you understand, you're not selling anything to anybody. You're just trying to find those 20 people and then those 6 people. Those 20 people are going to buy gold. They're going to be interested. They're really serious about putting some of their money into something that's sustainable and it has a future and that's going to be there. And of those, six people will actually take the business and run it as a business, working it daily, calling people up, talking to people, and understanding that they're not selling anything. They're just looking for those 20 people and then those six special people. That's all it is. It's a matter of numbers. And these numbers have been solidified over 5 years of Karat Bars being in existence. So nobody's selling gold. Nobody's trying to convince anybody of anything. You're just simply looking for those people that already understand that they better do something quick, because all their dollars are going to be worthless very soon. They actually are worthless right now. But anyway, I wanted to explain that because it's very important. Sometimes people email me. I've gotten emails from people. Oh, I'm surprised you're trying to sell that stuff. I'm not trying to sell anything. I'm simply looking for people who understand that their money is worthless. And they want to take that worthless money and put it into Karat Bars. And that's the future. And that's not all your money. No, a smart person has a diversified portfolio. You have some of this, and then some people say, well, I don't know if I should buy that or regular gold. Well, really, if you're of that mindset, you should do both. Because regular gold, if you want to use it, you have to sell it back to the gold guy before you can get money to actually use it. And in a crisis or an event of terrorism, that gold store ain't going to be open. Karat bars are spendable in the form that they're in. So at any rate, and more people are taking Karat bars. So at any rate, those are just some of the issues here. But nobody's trying to sell anything to anybody. You're just trying to find those people who already understand they have to do something with their money, and that's it. If you think you're going to go out and sell something to people, hey, forget it. That it ain't going to happen. So anyway, on to the main science topic, the similarity between comets, planets, asteroids, and literally even a grain of sand out in outer space, a molecule in outer space, has the same issues. And this has actually been proven. I was in a scientific conference one time, and these scientists were dropping barium out of a satellite. And they were looking from a distance to see what happened. As soon as they threw the barium out in a cloud, this is atomic barium. In other words, fine, super fine nanoparticles of barium throwing out into space, it immediately formed a negative electron cloud out on the sunward side. And they couldn't figure this out. And of course, this is the kind of data that never, ever gets published. The reason I know about it is because I was sitting there in a scientific meeting listening to these guys talk. And I said, well, that's exactly right. That's the electron cloud that forms on the sunward side, just like a comet, just like planets, just like asteroids, etc. And by the way, let me just start off by talking about Mars. When recently they were talking about Mars having its oceans and atmosphere stripped away by the solar wind, they finally had to come out. I've been so successful at convincing the public that Mars has had its oceans and water stripped away that they had to come out with some kind of silly science, fairy tale science, tier two science, whatever you want to call it, garbage science for the public. That, and this was blasted all over the news media. I mean, if you didn't see this, you're blind. But anyway, and then they related it to Earth, saying, ooh, solar storm, blow all of Earth's atmosphere off. So, of course, it hasn't happened in billions of years that the solar wind would blow off the Earth's atmosphere. No, what happens? A comet comes by, attaches electrically if the surface gravity of that object, the nucleus of that comet, is bigger than Earth, then it sucks our atmosphere off, which has happened numerous times in Earth's history. But it's due to a passing large comet, not to the solar wind. And I'll explain some more in a minute. but this is what happened to Mars. But they can't say that, can they? And they got to put it billions of years ago, so that you don't think that that could happen today. Well, that's what did happen, and when Venus the comet came through the solar system within the last 10,000 years, it stripped Mars of its atmosphere and oceans. The ancients saw it. They tell us that. I mean, but modern science doesn't believe anything that the ancients say. But here's the problem with their little theory, that the solar wind is stripping off the atmosphere of Mars even today. They've gotten data with the MAVEN mission, which has been circling Mars for about a year now. But the problem is that atmosphere is coming into Mars, not going away. So they got it all backwards, which is not unusual. That's pretty typical of NASA scientists, the Tier 2 guys out there, the ones that get to blow their horn in the mass media. But here's the other catch. Venus, remember that the planets in order from the Sun are Mercury, which is very close to the Sun, in an elliptical orbit that's quite an angle off of the ecliptic. In other words, Mercury's orbit is inclined to the ecliptic. That the ecliptic is defined as the plane of Earth's orbit. And most of the planets, except for Pluto and except for Mercury, lie in that plane. Their orbits move around in this somewhat of a plane. And that's actually a problem that I dealt with back in the early days of solar system formation, that if something is above the plane of the planets, Jupiter and actually the other planets, but primarily Jupiter, pulls down on them. And if something is below the plane of the solar system, Jupiter pulls up on them. And so eventually everything gets pulled into the plane of Jupiter's orbit because it's the big guy out there. But anyway, back to my story here. We have Mercury close to the Sun, then Venus, then Earth, then Mars. Those are the four inner, what they call terrestrial planets, because they're mainly solid core, either iron or silicates or whatever, and some nickel, etc., but mainly a solid core. And then atmosphere, Mercury really doesn't have much of an atmosphere at all, extremely, extremely faint atmosphere. But Venus has this humongous atmosphere, 100 times denser than Earth's. Venus has a massive, massive atmosphere. And so here's the problem. They say that Earth is not losing its atmosphere because we have a protective magnetic field. Okay, well, maybe. But the issue is that Venus, which is far closer than the Sun to the Sun than Earth or Mars, certainly a lot closer than Mars ever thought about being, then Venus should have its atmosphere stripped away a long time ago also. Why does Venus have this massive, massive atmosphere if supposedly the solar wind can take off an atmosphere? But the stupid Tier 2 ignoramus NASA scientists can't see this contradiction. I mean, the first level thinking is, that's what it is. First level thinking. They can only see one little thing. They are so stupid, they can't realize that Venus would not have an atmosphere either, by their theory. Well, of course, that's like the guy that said bees, it's theoretically impossible for bees to fly. Well, forgot to look at the bees. And so, anyway, yeah, we're not dealing with higher level intelligence here, Tier 2 NASA science, but this gets blasted all over the news media. And then supposedly we're all supposed to worry that Earth is going to have its atmosphere blasted away. And then they came out with this complete Tier 2 fear porn that if Earth's magnetic field reverses, then we're going to have our atmosphere blown away. I just can't believe it. Well, I have news for you. Our magnetic field gets reversed all the time. It happens, I'd say, probably every 2 weeks to 3 weeks, Earth's magnetic field gets reversed, and here's how it happens. The solar wind has a tremendous amount of electric charge in it, both positive and negative. And as it moves out, it carries a magnetic field out with it. That magnetic field typically is in the northern direction relative to our north of planet Earth, where our magnetic field points north. And this is like a little bar magnet where you see the N at the one end and the S at the other end. We have simply made definitions in science that the one side of the magnet is the north side and one is the south side. And on Earth, the planet, the N side happens to correspond with the North Pole, which is our celestial pole also. So remember, when people start talking about pole shifts, there's the magnetic pole shift, and then there's a physical pole shift that changes our axis of rotation. And that's a complicated issue. I'm not going to go into it here. I talk about that in my pamphlet, Surviving Planet X Passage. There's a whole discussion on how the pole shifts occur in the difference between magnetic pole shift. And this is, of course, a lot of the fairy tale science that came out of a lot of the government disinformation programs back in the early 2000s that, oh, there was going to be a magnetic pole shift. Well, magnetic pole shift has nothing to do with the physical rotational pole of Earth. And recently, by the way, there have been some fear porn also by people saying, oh, the North Pole of Earth is rushing up towards the geographic North Pole, the rotational pole. In fact, it's not really rushing. It's just returning to where it should be. That's all, because about within the last 5,000 years, we had literally a physical pole shift, and that moved the magnetic field, and that's slowly creeping up back to the rotational North Pole, where it should be. It's just returning back to normal. That's why we have a lot of earthquake activity around the tectonic plates. It's not because the plates are moving. It's because everything is getting back to normal, and this is part of the adjustment process. So anyway, okay, back to the planets. And this fear porn that's coming out of NASA. They made a video. They've got a new satellite that's been up for a while called the Dynamic Solar Observatory. And with that, they can see much greater detail on the surface of the sun. So what did they do? They put together years of composite video from the surface of the sun. And they said, look at the sun. Look at all these explosions. Oh, my goodness, we're all going to die. And they put out this absolute fear porn garbage along with this MAVEN output from Mars, and they coordinated the two in an international fear porn campaign that somehow Earth's magnetic field would be reversed, we were going to have our atmosphere blown off, and everybody was going to die. And then, of course, the end point is that it would take out the grid. They're always hinting at this. The only trouble is the sun has never been at a lower ebb than it is right now. So let me get back to talking about the similarity between comets, planets, asteroids, and other objects. Like I said, the barium cloud that they threw out of a satellite was literally that. It acted like a composite object in terms of the solar wind. And so I'll repeat this. Most of you have read my books, understand the basic concept of my plasma discharge comet model. But remember the name of my very first book. It's called Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes. Now, if you really understand what's going on, you understand that Planet X is not just one Planet X. There are many, 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 many thousands, literally thousands of them. Out there, and this is coming out. Finally, they're actually having to admit this, that they've discovered thousands of planets. They just discovered a new one in November. They just announced it. But it is the farthest planet from the solar system, and they're calling it, oh, gee, the inner Oort cloud. I mean, these astronomers are so lame. They have no idea why there should be planets all over the place out there, thousands of them, including some very big ones. Remember last December, almost maybe a year ago, not quite a year ago, I think it was in January, astronomers from the Carnegie Mellon Institute came out and said they have detected two Planet X objects. And I just reeled, I just laughed my head off, because Phil Plait, the ding-dong Tier 5 scientist, maybe we'd put Phil in his own category, Tier 6, way down there on the intelligence level, never has had a real job as an astronomer. He taught in the community college for a while. Not exactly what I'd call a high-powered guy. But anyway, you know, slamming me for decades, for ages, about this Planet X issue, and of course, coupled with all the government disinformation that's out there, the crazy lady talks to aliens, and the, you know, all the other government plants that are out there trying to copy my work, etc. But I just thought it was so funny when these guys announced this, that they had discovered not just one, but two Planet X objects, and these are big. These are Jupiter-sized objects out there in the outer regions of our solar system. And he goes, you know, I've never seen anybody backpedal so hard. Just pretty comical. But at any rate, the reason those objects are out there is because they're in a region, which I call the nebular ion cloud, and you can see these big comets and, well, of course, planets forming, because that's how planets form. They're comets. So, I mean, I've hit the nail exactly on the head. And, not to blow my own horn too much here, but remember that this is the work I did back in the late 1970s when nobody had any clue about electricity Velikovsky had been around. He had talked about electrical conditions, but nobody had a theoretical idea of why this was the way it was. And that's when my work came along, and it not only just talked about comets, it talked about planets and planetary evolution and solar system evolution, the statistics of solar system evolution, Earth changes, the effects on weather. All of this I did pioneering work, and now people are talking about weather caused by solar wind and solar conditions. And my work was the work that really led to the understanding of how to manipulate weather. In the mid-1990s, I worked with the Russian scientists, and we developed the techniques, the satellite techniques for controlling weather, and then it got absconded with by the U.S. military, Mossad, CIA military, for destruction of the public and be used against the public. You know, these guys are insane. Not the Russians, the other people running the U.S. and the U.S. military. But anyway, back to the idea that in the late 1970s, I guarantee you, I was in the center of Cornell University. NASA scientists all around me, they had no clue, absolutely no clue, and they still don't, as to what is going on. It's amazing that everything they do is backwards. But okay, why are planets like comets? Because they're in the solar capacitor. They're discharging the solar capacitor. Why don't planets have tails like comets? Well, they actually do. All of the planets have tails. In fact, NASA came out and admitted when the New Horizons spacecraft went by Pluto, they said, Pluto's got a comet tail, Mars has a comet tail, and Venus have a comet tail. And why is it important for those three to be stated to have comet tails? Because previously they talked about planets with magnetic fields, being Earth, for example, Jupiter, Saturn, etc. They and the other planets, with moons, the Neptune, Uranus, those objects had magnetic fields, and that was known. It was understood. Also, a surprise when they found out that Jupiter had a magnetic field. And that was the first major planet besides Earth, has this whopping magnetic field. And they should have been able to determine that earlier with remote measurements, but they were too stupid to do that. But at any rate, the point is that Venus, Mars, and Pluto do not have magnetic fields, just a teensy weensy one. But my point is that before they talked about Earth, Jupiter, and the planets that have magnetic fields, they talked about magnetic tails, which was a complete misnomer because they were comet tails. The magnetic field is a secondary effect from electrical current moving in, and that's what causes the magnetic fields. The idea, and this I pointed out in my original work also, the idea that magnetic fields simply exist in outer space is false. The magnetic fields cannot exist simply by themselves, and the idea that there's some kind of a generator process going to create our geomagnetic field is false, because you need a contained wire for the current to flow in the Earth, in an open system like Earth, or in especially in the plasma environment of outer space. There's nothing to contain the electrical currents. They're free flowing. So there's no way to create a generator, because in a generator, the moving charge is contained in the wire, and there's an actual force on the wire. So when you build a generator, for example, you have to tie those wires in there and have them tied down very well in coils, etc., because there's a force generated by the current moving through the wire. In outer space, current does not move through a wire. Therefore, you cannot, I repeat, you cannot have a standard form of generator. And that's why, once again, the morons at NASA said about our magnetic field, they said, kind of like an electric generator, the Earth's magnetic field. Well, that's not like a generator, because there's no wire that contains the current. The current is free-flowing. In a free-flowing system, you cannot have electrical generation of a magnetic field that creates a force, and therefore creating the magnetic field that we see. In fact, it's like a circular argument, as you can see. And the plasma magnetic fields are free flowing, and they couple together. It's a very complex process, but it's not a generator in the classic sense of, like, you pull a gas rope on your generator. If the gas motor is hooked up to a generator, well, what's inside the generator? You have wires wrapped around coils, and those wires then rotate through magnetic fields of fixed magnets, or you could have, like, the alternator case, in which the fixed magnets are replaced with other coils where you run an electrical current through and create a magnetic field artificially. That's an alternator style of generator, but still, the moving coils have to move through a fixed magnetic field. And so you can do that because the coils have wires, and the current is contained in the wires, and that's where the force comes from, the EMF. And so you can either run it as a motor, or you can run it as a generator. But the whole reason it works is because the electrical current is running through a wire. Like I say, you do not have that in the Earth, so you can't compare the Earth's magnetic field to your backyard electric generator, gas generator, or wind-powered, whatever the source of power is. Okay, so anyway, back to comets, planets, asteroids. Many times asteroids are seen as objects which form tails, and then the tails go away. Comet 67P is a great example. They've been watching that. They've expected it to flare into brightness and have all of this dynamic activity around the nucleus as it got next to perihelion. But they're sitting there, and the scientists have their instruments trained on the nucleus. Ain't nothing going on. They can't see anything. They're measuring electric currents. They're measuring the electron density. They're seeing molecules, oxygen, diatomic oxygen molecules out in the tail area that they don't know why they're there, but then they look at the nucleus, and nothing's coming off the nucleus. So where's all this coming from? Well, obviously, my model is the only model that explains where this tail material is coming from. It's coming in from outside. The carbon oxygen, the carbon hydrogen, the nitrogen hydrogen, nitrogen oxygen molecules, etc., are all forming in the tail as these raw atoms and molecules come in to form larger chains in the comet tail area. And because 67P does not have a very powerful gravitational field, it really doesn't hold on to much of this. And there's no water down deep in the nucleus. The dirty snowball comet model, which they keep talking about, even though this nucleus is a rock, it has layered rock in the nucleus. It's not a composite of dust and snow like they talked about. Not at all. This nucleus was created in a environment, a planet, which had water activity to lay down those layers. That's the only physical process that we know about that could actually create layered geology that we see sticking out the outcrops. I've got pictures on my webpage relating to that. And so what's going on with all of these objects is they're discharging the solar capacitor. Earth's weather is due to the fact that we have all kinds of electrical activity connecting to our upper planetary atmosphere. This drives energy down into the lower atmosphere, including El Nino, La Nina, hurricanes, tornadoes, thunderstorms, the whole gamut of weather that we see, wind itself, clouds. You wouldn't have cloud formation if there wasn't a vertical electric field. You wouldn't have snow if there weren't an electric field in the atmosphere. Imagine that. Most of the northern hemisphere, the majority of land on Earth is covered by snow for 4 to 6 months of the year, and snow will not form in an atmosphere without an electric field. That's how the snowflakes form. There's a piece of dust. It creates a comet activity, as in just like by discharging the local electric field. In the water, it creates a negative charge on that little piece of dust or whatever in the core of the snowflake. In laboratory experiments, that's how they've reproduced snowflakes. It didn't work. They took a pinhead, they put it in a vacuum, they put water vapor, and then in a freezing environment, and they tried to make snowflakes. When they got these long, stringy-looking icicle things, and it didn't really work, until they put an electric field on it. As soon as they put the electric field on it, and it didn't matter which direction the electric field was, as long as there was an electric field there, the snowflakes formed, regular snowflakes in the laboratory. But they need an electric field. So you wouldn't have snow if it were not for the vertical electric field. Nothing of our weather would exist without that vertical electric field and the electron and ion currents that go up and down relative to these. And of course, this is all explained in my books. But there again, my book, Planet X Comets and Earth Changes, is really a compilation of work that happened back in the late 1970s when I developed all of this work. Planet X Comets and Earth Changes was a book that came out to fill a public need when all of the Planet X hysteria was going on in the late 1990s and the early 2000s. You know, crazy lady talks to aliens, 2003, everybody's supposed to die. That was a complete fabricated government disinformation program. And unfortunately, there's the public, unfortunately, and that's why I try to keep this show current. I try and talk about real science, is because unfortunately the science has been, the scientific ineptitude of the public has just been pounded upon you. Now there's, by the way, You may have heard there's just so much about the so-called flat earth coming back. I've talked about this on my show, how you measure. This is literally a third grade science project. Back in the early, I think it was about 1100, there were techniques developed to measure the radius of the earth and the circumference of the earth. That are very simple. And you don't have to go anyplace. You don't have to go out to sea. It's very simple techniques in very basic equipment that you could literally make. This is a third grade science project to measure the radius and circumference of the Earth. And I got a kick out of. I was talking to one of these flat Earth guys. I said, "Well, how big is the Earth? You know, if it's flat." I don't know. Well, where does it end? Does it go on forever? When you go on your airplane, they were talking about the Earth being infinitely flat. And I said, where are all the cities that are out there to infinity? I don't know. And then I said, "Well, where's the edge of the Earth if it's flat?" I don't know. Gee, I don't know. No, they don't know anything. They're a bunch of idiots. And, of course, this is a government disinformation program, if there ever was one. And it's just meant to disrupt things, so it doesn't deserve any conversation. But here's something, a good thing for kids to do. It's, a third or fifth grade science project to measure the circumference or radius of the Earth. And you can go on the internet and there's a dozen ways to do it easily. I talked about one. If you have a 500 or 600 foot building or mountain or hill where you can see the ocean or a large body of water, where you, like one of the Great Lakes, where you can see all the way to the horizon and there's still water, you can easily measure the radius of the Earth with just a carpenter's level and a protractor. It's very simple. And so, anyway, it's something, that's what I'd suggest, third grade, fifth grade science project for kids to measure literally the radius of the Earth. But back to comets, planets, asteroids, any other object, anything in the solar system, and this includes those thousands of new planets they're discovering out there. Oh, and by the way, the other thing is that they started to look out of the ecliptic plane of the planets, and that's where this new November discovery was made. So before they were saying, well, objects were thrown out of the inner solar system, and it's this big Jupiter planet moved through the solar system and caused all this disruption, caused all those planets to move out there, but then this big planet had to move out. The fairy tale science is coming out. It's just so bad that, they're not even worth talking about. But any object in the solar system is going to discharge the solar capacitor. That causes an electric current to flow outwards from the sun and to that object. And why does it always go to the object? It's just like the backyard bug killer. Why does the electric discharge always occur where the bug is? How is it so smart to know that? Well, that's the way discharges work. They discharge to the object that's creating the discharge. And here's something you can do, too. It's kind of a simple home experiment. Take a small plastic ball, one of these balls that kids play with, maybe little, smaller than a basketball. It could be basketball size, but, something a bit smaller, one of these plastic balls filled with air, and throw it in your tub and put some water in the tub so that the ball is floating. And now move the ball over to the running water. And what happens? Well, the water hits one side of the ball and it makes it spin in that direction. So the ball is always trying to go into the flow of water. And logic would possibly tell you, or false logic actually, would tell you that the water hitting the ball would make it jump away. But just the opposite happens. Try it. You know, put some water in the tub. Take one of these little kids' play balls that's full of air, plastic ball, and then put it in the tub and watch it when it gets over by the water that's falling out of the faucet. The ball will continually try and go in underneath the running water instead of being blown away. And so that's just the way it works. Just understand the water is making the ball turn in the direction of going towards the falling water. So it's always going to stay in the right there at the falling water. And the same thing, there are similar effects, but with electricity, it's simply discharging where it's not exactly the same, but that's kind of an analogy. It's acting the same when you have a comet or an asteroid or a planet in the electric field of the sun, which is caused by a non-uniform distribution of charge in the solar wind. And there again, that goes back to my original work. So this is all basic physics. There's nothing new and magical or relativistic. No, this is all basic physics. And once I understood this, then I could take it to its logical conclusions and start talking about weather, making weather predictions, talking about how the planets interact or the moon. When the moon is passing new moon, that's one of the triggering points for weather, etc. And by the way, beware on the internet, YouTube, there's 1,000 guys out there now trying to sound intelligent, talking about weather and various things. A lot of quacks. A lot of people that really don't know anything have trying to make up their own terminology and stuff. Yeah, the internet is full of quacks, believe me. But at any rate, then once the electrical discharge occurs, the electrons are the primary charge carriers, so they build up a charge on the sunward side of the nucleus. And that's where, like with the barium cloud, those guys were seeing it that I heard talking at a scientific conference, and they didn't have a clue as to why that was happening. And of course, they never published the results because they didn't know what was going on, why there should be a cloud of electrons on the sunward side of a bunch of nanoparticle barium that's out in outer space. And to them, it didn't make sense. So at any rate, why then do not planets have great big comet tails? Well, actually they do, but they're not as intense as a regular comet because the regular comet is in elliptical orbit. It's cutting through the potential, the gradient of the change of the magnetic field, or it's called gradient, and therefore the discharge around a comet due to its elliptical orbit is much more exaggerated than that of the planets, which are in nice near circular orbits. And that's also explained in my early work. All of this is from my early work. So we're talking about stuff now that's, I mean, goodness, look at the 1979, 80. Let's take 1980 as just an average year. You know, that's 35 years ago. And they're still pounding the same silly science down the throat of the public. They're still trying to create wars using boogeymen. You know, the bag of tricks that these guys are using has not grown at all. They, you know, but they keep continuing to fool the public. But at any rate, the Earth then is just like a comet. Comets are like planets. And really, you should mix them all together. There's no difference between an asteroid and a comet other than its orbit. And these kind of things should have been identified a long time ago. There was some inklings about asteroids being in the asteroid belt, but then they discovered that some of the asteroids form tails. And that's where, like, a comet like Comet Holmes was an asteroid at one point. Before it became the biggest comet ever seen in the solar system, it was larger than the sun. That's how big Comet Holmes was, and it was actually a quite small comet nucleus. But the coma became bigger than the sun, and I actually had predicted that. You can look on my homepage. I have a section about Comet Holmes. you have to dig around a little bit, because really what I have now for my homepage is basically a landing page. All of the content you have to go into subpages to find. But I predicted, because of an alignment, I forget what the alignment was. I think it was like Mercury, Mars, and was it Jupiter or something? I forget. But Comet Holmes, and I said, wow, that thing's going to explode into brightness. And bam, on cue, exactly the day that I predicted it, Comet Holmes went from a normal little comet up to this big comet coma, which was bigger than the sun. The nucleus, of course, remained the same little. But the coma, the gas cloud that surrounded the comet, became bigger and bigger. So at any rate, I hope that gives you a little bit of an idea. So whether it's a dust particle or an asteroid or a comet or a planet, they're all doing the same thing. And so that's when I say, like the title of my book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, that's literally putting them all in the same category. In fact, galaxies act like comets. Quasars act like comets in the electric field of the galaxy. I'm just about out of time here. I just want to remind you that on my webpage, I have a sale that's continuing for the stainless steel water filters and the new Traveler smaller size stainless steel water filter on sale, now including free shipping and also the 10 packs of water filter elements. Those would be good presents if you know somebody has a water filter. Send them a 10-pack for Christmas. They're on sale with free shipping. And, of course, we ship worldwide. Also, Carrot Bars and Via Viente there. Look into those programs. And remember, you're not trying to sell anything to anybody. You're not going up and down the street saying, hey, would you like to buy this? No. Well, all I do is I talk about this with, just talking to people in everyday life. People go, doggone, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm worried about my pension. I'm worried about my future. We're saving money, but it's losing value every day. I don't know what to do. Well, here's this Carrot Bars deal. Or if people are like all run down and their health isn't good 99% of the time, and they say, well, I'm eating good. No, you're not. You're eating food from the store, but it's not good food. There's no food value. So you eat a nice big salad, you probably got about a tenth of the food value you should be getting. That's where Via Viente comes in. You know, you take a little bit each day, and it provides you with all of those things you need that you're missing, especially minerals and vitamins and enzymes and antioxidants. Very important. So go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. And what you do there helps support all of this out here. Keeps me going. And, of course, in this world we're living in today, it's just crazy. But that's the way it is. I guess, like I said, be prepared. Start becoming prepared. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And, as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.